Recently, an aunt of mine passed away. To my surprise, she left me a cabin near a local national forest. It's something that has been passed down throughout our family, kept in good repair, but rarely used. In it, I found a large chest full of journals and letters. It's obvious that all of the writing is fiction. None of the events described in these pages ever happened. They could not have happened. But there's something about this collection of unsettling documents, the way they're written, perhaps, that makes the nonsense that they contain convincing. That's why I'm sharing these journals here. Maybe someone can help me understand them, or simply be amused. Maybe someone will finally convince me that it isn't real. There are a lot of books in this chest. Handwritten, typed, journals, letters, all different handwriting, all describing incredible scenarios and horrors. It's not possible that any of them could have ever happened. Of that, I'm sure. But all seem to be legitimate. And I fear that if I sent the books to an expert, he would find them to be authentic in construction of the times that they claim to be from. I've taken to referring to this collection as the Diaries of Dread, because entertaining the idea that these people, that these events are real, one can't help but feel the chill of dread. I'm searching through them right now to find more on this story. But so far, none. I find myself shuddering at the thought of what might have further occurred to this person. But I also feel like I need to know. Strangely, I'm starting to feel that about all of these books and letters here. I feel like I have to understand them. I have to consume every word. Maybe I'll read more of them to you. Maybe you can help me. La Danse Infernale by Late Stage Infernalism. This was found in a letter written from a young woman to her friend. The exact date was obscured, but the thick cream paper seems to indicate that it was written around 1880. The destination address was London, but the sender, well, you'll see. Madame Harrington, 101 Cavendish Square, London, June 1st, 18-something. Dearest friend, I must inform you of recent developments in my life that will, I fear, render further meetings between us impossible. Please express my shame and regret to my parents and brother, but only disclose other details at your discretion. I fear that they would not understand them and would think me mad or perhaps deceased. To my great regret, I have found the hidden truth. That which ceases moving cannot ever truly die. I first saw him at the Palace Garnier in Paris. It was the last performance of the acclaimed but scandal-laden opera, Le Roi and Joan. I was accompanying my married friend with her husband, chaperoned properly by my own brother. My friend had married quite well, so we had the use of our own private box. During the final aria, I felt something magnetic pull my gaze from the gaudy colors of the stage and across the auditorium to a figure who stood alone in another box. My heart stopped for a moment. I watched him, watching me. He did not flinch or look away or make any expression of apology as a gentleman should. I could not see him well, but he could see me in detail, I knew, as he raised his opera glasses in salute to me. I returned my sight to the stage, feeling the heat of shame rise to my face. I do not know what, in particular, about that moment afflicted me so deeply. I have experienced the inappropriate attentions of certain men before. Although unmarried, I am no blushing ingenue. But I tell you, in truth, that he consumed me with his violating perceptions. I felt as unclothed and vulnerable as any helpless virgin might when she is at the mercy of a ruthless and barbaric man. This aroused in me a perverse longing that perhaps I do not need to explain to you. The intensity of his want, appropriate or not, set me ablaze. I do not say such things to shock you, dearest friend, only to explain what has happened. After the performance ended, I was in the grand foyer. I was briefly separated from my party by the crowd. I felt the lightest of taps upon my shoulder. I turned, and there he was, the man who would become my intended. He bowed low in an older fashion, but there was a hint of mockery in his posture, not of me, but of the setting. He seemed to know that all the finery and manners in the world are for naught. Eventually, everything around us crumbles into ash and dust. He wore a suit that, well, it was not Pall Mall fashion. His jacket, waistcoat, even his trousers were all different hues of discordant yellow, amber, and gold. His hair was coiffed in a fashion perhaps 50 years out of date. He wore a simple metallic domino mask, which was entirely out of touch with the event. And yet I found none of this odd. He held out his hand to me and I, without a moment's thought, took it. The world faded. The magnificent walls and ceiling and even floors vanished, and yet I felt no terror. Only the great chandeliers remained, barely pushing back the void which surrounded us. I heard music then, simple, with piano and chimes and several instruments that I could not place. It was somehow both modern and ancient, inspiring yet melancholy. And so, despite the setting, we danced. For hours we danced. There was no end to our spinning and winding course. I felt the sweat on my brow and I knew that my dress must have been ruined by it. It did not matter. I had never felt such impudent and awful joy. And making it all worse was my partner's unspoken promise that one day we would dance on the bones of all those who had been with us in the opera house, and that we would reside together in infinite majesty. He never speaks, so I do not know how he imparts such knowledge to me, but I must assure you that he does. It seemed to last an eternity, but it was over in a moment. He vanished and left me spinning, suddenly back amongst the bustling crowd of opera goers. I almost collapsed, but fortunately my dearest brother was there to catch me. I felt quite lightheaded, which distracted me from the madness and impossibility of what had just occurred. I have always been irritated by those women who feigned at every opportunity, hoping to draw the attention of an attentive man. But this was not the case that evening. I was exhausted, as if I had truly spent the entire evening waltzing without rest. When we returned to our rooms, I collapsed almost immediately upon undressing into a stupor. My dreams are not fit for any lady to write down, and I do not wish you to think me madder than you already do. So I would simply say that while I enjoyed them, I woke in a fit of screaming and crying. My brother and friend were both understandably concerned and insisted on sending for a doctor over my objections. I agreed, however, hoping against hope that perhaps I was ill with some malady of the flesh or even mad. For even then, in my virginal innocence, I knew that I preferred madness to the fate that my suitor promised. In his dark eyes, I had seen the end of both morality and sanity. I would have done almost anything to prevent such an end. The doctor told me to rest for a week, so I did. It did not matter. I slept all day, took only the most flavorless and healthy meals, drank red wine for my blood, barely left my bed, but still I grew worse. It was because while my host saw me dreaming at night, I was dancing all night, every night with him, my merciless betrothed. On the seventh night, he took me. He did not ask, nor did he marry me first. On the eighth night, I vanished from my bed, and I knew that I would never see my brother or any other family again. I awoke, finally and truly awoke, in my new home to the great drums beating and the clamor of impossibly loud brass horns. I lay in the finest of beds, the posts gaudy and covered in jewels. But the mattress smelt of the rot of ages. From the window I could hear my beloved subjects, although I did not wish to look out into that pallid and unhealthy light. The people cried my name in exultation. I knew then that I had been wooed by a king. Everything after this is but dim and terrible. Both wedding festival and night fade and rise in my memory, and I do not recall them, if only to preserve the remnants of my sanity. During the day, we rule and feast and observe the most terrible of entertainments. During the evenings, we dance and then make love savagely in the manner of my new home. No matter how weary I become, my master never allows me to sleep. My beloved is as unknowable as he is terrible, but he is understanding. He allowed me the dispensation to write and post this letter to you, my oldest friend since childhood. I wanted at least one to know that my doom is as magnificent as it is eternal. Danced, will dance, and dance still evermore, until the streets crumble and the cities burn, and the men finally lose themselves in a mad joy at the end of time. Do not fear my fate, for you and all you love will be long dead before my lord and master returns to reclaim the rest of his kingdom. Your eternally loving and suffering friend, Mademoiselle Casilda de Hastur, Nez Valiance, The Amber Tower by the Pallid Lake, Carcosa.